the other last point she was making about becoming free from attachment to family, and it just came into my mind, this point that Prabhupada makes in one of the purports in the Bhagavad Gita. I forget the verse, but he says that within family life, then chanting the holy name, reading Srimad Bhagavatam, taking prasadam, worshipping the deity. And is there one more? I think there's five things. He says these should be there within family life. So would these be the way by which we... It's kind of, this is there to help us to become detached from the bodily concept and increase the awareness of the kind of spiritual identity of the family members.
Well, it's there for many things. It achieves many things. It's there ultimately to help you love Krishna. So our idea is not to being free from the material things isn't the goal of Krishna consciousness. That just sort of clears the way. It's like you go into a garden, or you go into some field that's full of rocks and weeds, and so you gotta get rid of the rocks, you gotta get rid of the weeds before you can really start planting seeds and growing nice flowers. So anartha nivritti is just one part, it's just a preparatory part. Then there has to be artha pravritti. So Krishna consciousness is not about, well, just about anartha nivritti, getting rid of anarthas. Being an impersonal is just getting rid of anarthas.
I was just about to ask that. So is this where impersonalism, it just gets to the point of anartha nivritti, but they don't fill it
with something? Anartha nivritti, and then but they don't go into really cultivating spiritual qualities. They want to become one with absolute spiritual existence, but they don't really go beyond cultivating the relationship with the absolute truth. Because they don't really cultivate humility, then they can't become humble enough to actually accept being a servant. And they want to, they're proud, so they hang on to their pride, and sometimes their knowledge and renunciation, and that even feeds that pride, because they become proud of that, and therefore they become manias, and they think they're liberated, but because they reject being a servant of Krishna's lotus feet, then ultimately they also fall down. So they may be empowered, they become empowered, and they can do things just like Maharaj Vishnadev says, Mahatvaram Seva Mahuri Mukti. And Prabhupada says, you have to take shelter of a Mahat, maybe Vaishnava or maybe an impersonalist. But if that impersonalist doesn't, the guru doesn't associate with the Vaishnava, then he'll fall down. And then he'll lose his empowerment. He doesn't keep going. Something else.
John, we probably had a couple more philosophical questions.
One was about, we hear that it's supposed to be Satya Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, Treta Yuga, and then Kali Yuga, but Treta Yuga and Dwapara Yuga got mixed up. So I was wondering whether their qualities, like people's life, length of life, how long they live, and the different qualities of the age, they get mixed up as well, and if they do, then why are they still called Dwapara Yuga and Treta Yuga?
Generally, when Srila Prabhupada is talking, then he just does the counting in the same way. In other words, that Dwapara Yuga lasts for the length of Treta Yuga, vice versa. And the qualities are also there. The benefit was solely just because of this curse on Ahalya, and it was really meant to shorten the amount of time that she's under as a stone. So that's, at least that was the purpose of the curse, and that was the purpose of changing the ages, that you know she would have to wait until Lord Ramachandra touched her. Is that anyway? And therefore there was a, I can't remember what it is. Let me just look. She was married to much older Gotama. Indra comes disguised as her husband, although she sees through his disguise, but accepts his advances. Their sources often absolve her of guilt. How she falls prey to Indra's trickery or is raped. But they're cursed by Gotama. The curse varies from text to sex, but in almost all versions describe Rama as the eventual agent of liberation and redemption. She's a bunch of kind of archetypes of female chastity. So I'm getting to what the curse is and what the time of the curse. Won't say anything about the curse punishment. It's remained invisible for thousands of years. And she'll become free when Ram visits her. Ahalya, who turned into stone when Indra, the king of heaven, molested her and was delivered by Lord Ramachandra. It was Ahalya, the king of the stone. And anyway, that's it in the book, Ahalya.
One more about is a pastime in Chaitanya Charitamrita, but Brahmana lady touched Lord Chaitanya's feet as a show of respect, and Lord Chaitanya, in a mood of a devotee, he was very disturbed and he jumped into the Ganges to get rid of the.
This is where?
In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the Adilila 17th chapter.
That someone touched Lord Chaitanya's feet?
Yeah. Brahmin lady touched his feet. And the Prabhupada explains that people touch saintly person's feet to get rid of their karmic reactions. And Lord Chaitanya jumped into Ganges. He didn't like this show of respect. And then the next pastime, or maybe the one after that, is when Lord Chaitanya is disrespected by these students when he chants Gopi Gopi. So Lord Chaitanya decides to take sannyas. So people will naturally show him respect, and that way he can fulfill his mission. So I was thinking about these two pastimes, one when he's disturbed that he's shown respect, and then the next one he takes sannyas, so people will show him respect.
But that's when a person accepts respect as service, just like you said, children should learn how to respect their parents. Otherwise, how are we going to learn respect? You have to show respect to sannyasis, spiritual masters, elders, and they have to teach. The Prabhupada would say, I have to teach them how to serve the spiritual master. It's not because Prabhupada wanted that's because that's his service. The service is to instruct, and unless disciples know how to worship the spiritual master, how to serve him, and so on, then how are they going to learn? I don't know who this is going to learn. So, but that's a sign of humility. That's a responsibility. So same thing as a devotee, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't like that people just show him respect like that. But as a preacher, there's another thing in the role of a preacher. So we all have different roles, and when we're in a particular role, then that becomes false humility, not to expect the responsibility that comes along with it. You know, a king takes taxes. He's not meant to live like a Brahmin. A king is also meant to reflect the strength, opulence, culture of a state or a country. He can only do that if he's living in a palace. If he's living under a tree in a grass hut, people aren't going to think much of that state. So it's his responsibility to do that. And because it's incumbent upon him, therefore it's acceptable for him, and not acceptable for the Brahmin, but because the Brahmin's representing something else. So he takes taxes, and he enjoys part of those taxes. But he does that because that's his duty as king. Same thing for a Brahmin. Brahmin takes charity. He then distributes that charity, but it's his duty to accept the charity. So in the same way that one accepts respect, but respect for whom? It's on behalf of Krishna. And therefore, if it's passed on, then it's all right. But if the king becomes an enjoyer rather than representative of the state, then he becomes entangled in sin. If the Brahmin collects dakshina and keeps it for himself, then he becomes entangled. If the guru wants respect, he wants to be respected, he, rather than as the representative of Krishna, then he also becomes entangled and his spiritual life decreases. Anything else?
Just on that point, Guru Maharaj, there's this expression that a person should command respect and not demand respect. And you gave the example that the parents have to teach the children to respect them. In the beginning, they have to learn to respect their parents so that they can learn the meaning of respect. So do the parents teach the children just through their behaviour, which commands the respect of the children, or do they actually have to tell the children directly that you should actually show respect to your parents? How is it? How does the parents communicate to the children that they should give respect without demanding it for themselves?
How does the guru do it?
Well, the guru does it. As far as I understand, he commands the respect to the disciples, but when the children are so young that they don't understand what respect is and what are qualities that they should look up to.
Well, you instruct them, and the children are going to respond first to what they hear rather than what they see. Mm. So, you know, if you're sitting quietly somewhere, and you're not going to wait for the children to realize that because you're quiet, therefore they should be quiet before they're going to be quiet. You have to teach them. Mm. So children aren't going to recognize things, they're not going to be able to command things unless you first teach them, unless you demand from them, and first you teach them. Mm. Then, when their intelligence develops, then they'll be able to recognize. Mm. Parents are going to, you know, they start eating all kinds of dirt outside, you're just going to let them do it, you're going to tell them what to do. So children need to learn and develop discrimination. That depends upon how the parents have actually instructed them. Obviously, there's different ways of teaching children. And how you demand respect is a different thing. If you want to beat them, then that's not a good way. It's not going to work. But if you explain things to them nicely and you reason with them and you treat them like people and with kindness and love, then it will work. Something else?
We didn't have any more philosophical. Do you have any more? No more philosophical questions written down.
Okay, we'll do some other things.